and you knew that's what I meant, and London loves spending time with you. She put a hand on my arm.
Now, Russ, you know how much I love her, too. But I can't watch London every day until she starts school, she said. Like you, I have things to do.
It's just temporary, I protested. By next week, I'm hoping you won't have to.
Tomorrow I won't be here. My gardening club is hosting a tulip and daffodil workshop, and they have some exotic bulbs we can buy. I'm hoping to surprise your father next spring. You know he's never had great luck with tulips, and I volunteer on Thursdays and Fridays.
Oh, I said, my head suddenly spinning. I heard my mom let out a sigh.
As for today, though, and since London is already here, what time will you be finished with your meeting?
11:45, maybe?
My lunch is at noon, so why don't you plan on coming to the restaurant to pick her up? London can sit with me and my friends until you get there.
That would be great, I said, feeling a surge of relief. Where is it? She mentioned a place that I happened to know, though I'd never been there before.
What time is your meeting again?
The meeting. Oh, crap. I've got to go, Mom. I can't tell you how much I appreciate this.
Seriously? Marge asked. You're upset with Mom because she happens to have her own life?
I was zipping along the highway, talking through my Bluetooth. Weren't you listening? I have meetings all week. What am I going to do?
Hello, daycare? Hire a babysitter for a couple of hours? Ask one of the neighbors? Set up a play date and then ditch the kid?
I haven't had a spare minute to explore anything like that.
You have time to talk to me right now.
Because I'm hoping you'll watch London for a couple of hours tomorrow. Vivian and I talked about it. London's already having a hard enough time with Vivian going off to work.
Is she?
Aside from an apparent dislike of dance class, not that I've noticed, but... Anyway, I called because I was hoping that...
Don't even go there, Marge warned, cutting me off.
Go where?
You're going to ask me if I can watch London tomorrow since Mom closed that door. Or Thursday or Friday. Or all three.
Like I said, Marge is wise. I don't know what you're talking about. I could practically hear my sister rolling her eyes.
Don't play dumb and don't bother denying it either. Why else would you be calling?
Do you know how many times in the past 5 years you've called me at work?
Not offhand, I admitted. Zero.
That's not true.
You're right. I'm lying to you. You call me every day. We chat and giggle like middle school girls for hours while I'm doodling. Hold on for a second.
I heard my sister cough, the sound deep and harsh. You okay? I asked.
I think I picked up a virus.
In the summer?
I had to bring Dad to the doctor yesterday, and the waiting room was filled with sickness and disease. It's a wonder I didn't leave on a stretcher.
How's Dad?
It'll take a few days for the labs to come in, but the stress test and EKG showed his heart was fine. Lungs, too. The doctor seemed pretty amazed, despite how surly Dad was.
Sounds like him, I agreed. My mind circled back to London again. What am I supposed to do with London if I can't find anyone to watch her?
You're smart. You'll figure it out.
You're such a supportive and helpful sister.
I try.
The meeting with the owners of the sandwich shop went about as well as the one with the chiropractor the day before. Not because they weren't interested. The owners, a married couple from Greece, knew that advertising would help their business. The problem was that they were barely earning enough to keep the doors open and still cover their expenses. They told me to come back in a few months, when they had a better handle on things, and offered me a sandwich as I was getting ready to leave.
It's delicious, the husband said. All our sandwiches are served in fresh pita bread that we make here.
It's my grandmother's recipe, the wife added.
I had to admit that the bread smelled heaven sent, and I could see the great care the husband took when making the sandwich. The wife asked if I wanted some chips and something to drink. Why not? And they handed me my lunch, both of them wearing smiles. After that, they presented me with the bill. I made it to the lunch gathering of the Red Hat Society at 12:15. Despite the inconvenience I'd no doubt caused my mom, I had the sense that my mom was proud to show off her granddaughter, who was something of a novelty in that group.
Daddy!
London called out as soon as she saw me. She scooted off her chair and ran toward me.
They said I could come back to one of their lunches any time.
My mom got up from the table and gave me a hug, away from the group. Thanks for watching her, Mom.
My pleasure, she said. She was a hit.
I could tell. But tomorrow and the rest of the week... I know, I said. Tulips, volunteering. On our way out, I reached for London's hand. It was small in mine, warm and comforting.
Daddy, she said.
Yes?
I'm hungry.
Let's go home and get you a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
We can't,
London said. Why not?
We don't have any bread.
We went to the grocery store, where, for the first time, I grabbed a cart. For the next hour, I slowly worked my way through Vivian's list, backtracking to a previously visited aisle more than once. I have no idea what I would have done had London not been there to help me, since she had a knowledge of the brands that went well beyond her 5 years. I had no idea where to find spaghetti squash, nor could I tell whether an avocado was ripe by squeezing it, but somehow, with her and a few store employees' help, I was able to cross everything off the list. While I was there, I saw mothers with children of all ages, most appearing as overwhelmed as I felt and felt a fleeting kinship with them. I wondered how many of them, like me, would rather have been in an office instead of the meat section of the store, where it took me nearly 5 minutes to find the organic, free-range chicken breasts that Vivian had specified. Back home, after making a sandwich for London and unpacking the groceries, I spent the rest of the afternoon alternately working and cleaning while making sure London was okay, feeling the whole time like I was swimming against a never-ending current. Vivian arrived home at 6:30 and spent time with London for a few minutes before meeting me in the kitchen, where I'd started putting together a salad.
How's the chicken marsala coming?
Chicken marsala?
With spaghetti squash on the side?
She laughed.
I'm kidding. I'll get it going. It won't take long.
How was work today?
Busy, she said. I spent most of the day learning about the journalist I mentioned yesterday and trying to figure out the angle he wants to take for the article, and of course how to contain the story once it's out and generate some positive coverage instead.
Do you have a guess as to the kind of story it might be?
I suspect it's just the usual garbage, similar to what's been written before. The journalist is an environmentalist nut, and he's been talking to people who claim that one of the oceanfront condo developments took a lot of shortcuts, and was not only illegal but has caused severe beach erosion on another part of the beach during the last tropical storm. Basically, it's all about blaming the rich people whenever Mother Nature strikes.
You know Spannerman's not an eco-friendly guy, right? By then, Vivian was pouring herself a glass of wine.
Walter's not like that anymore. He's changed a lot since you knew him.
I doubt it, I thought.
It sounds like you've got a good handle on it, I offered instead. I'm just glad the article isn't coming out this week. Walter's got a big fundraiser scheduled this weekend in Atlanta for his pack.
He has a pack now?
I mentioned it to you before, she said.
She placed a frying pan on the stove, added the chicken, and began rifling through the spice cabinet.
He started it a couple of years ago and has been funding it himself. Now he's decided to reach out to others for support. And that's what I'm going to be overseeing for the next 3 days. He hired an event company to run the program, and while they've done a good job, he wants it to be perfect. That's where I come in. He knows I was in entertainment, and he wants me to see if I can find a musical act, someone big.
For this weekend? That doesn't give you a lot of time.
I know, and I told him exactly that. I put a call into my old boss, and he gave me the names of some people to call, so we'll see. On the plus side, Walter is willing to pay whatever it costs, but it means I'll probably be working late all week. And I'll have to go to Atlanta.
You're kidding, I said. It's only your second day at work.
Don't be like that, she said as she began browning the chicken. It's not like he gave me much of a choice in the matter. Pretty much every major developer from Texas to Virginia is coming, and all the executives have to go. And it's not all weekend. I fly out Saturday morning and come back Sunday.
I didn't like it, but what could I do? All right, I said. It sounds like you're already becoming indispensable.
I'm trying, she smiled. How was London today? Did she do okay at piano?
She did great. I'm not sure she likes dance all that much. She was quiet after class yesterday. The teacher was upset because you were late, so London was upset too. The instructor seems a little intense.
She is, and that's why her dance teams win so many competitions.
She nodded toward London.
While I get dinner going, will you get London into the bath?
Now?
That way you can read to her after we eat and get her down for the night. She's tired, and like I told you, I've got a ton of work on tap.
Sure, I said, realizing that once again, I'd likely be going to bed alone. Chapter 7 2x2 When London was 3 and a half, the three of us went on a picnic near Lake Norman. It was something we only did once. Vivian packed a delicious lunch, and on our way to Lake Norman, and because the day was breezy, we stopped at a hobby store on the way to buy a kite. I'd picked the kind of kite that had been popular when I was a kid. Simple and inexpensive, nothing like the kind of kites that avid enthusiasts would dream of flying. It ended up being the perfect kite for a child. I was able to launch it myself, and once it rose high, it seemed as if it was practically stuck to the sky. It didn't matter what I did. I could stand in place or walk around, and when I handed London the kite reel and secured it to her wrist, it didn't matter what she did either. She could pick flowers or run around chasing butterflies. A nice couple had a small cocker spaniel, and she was able to sit on the ground and let the puppy crawl over her while the kite stayed fixed in the air. When we finally got around to having lunch, I looped the string around a nearby bench, and the kite simply hovered above us. Vivian was in a buoyant mood, and we stayed at the park for most of the afternoon. On the way home, I can remember thinking to myself that times like this were what life was really all about, and that no matter what, I'd never let my family down. But here and now, I was doing exactly that, or at least right now it felt that way. It felt to me as though I was letting everyone down, including myself. It was Wednesday, day 3 for Vivian at work, and I was on my own with London. All day. As I stood with London outside chiropractor number 2's office, I felt almost as though I were shipping my daughter off to a foreign country. The thought that she'd sit in the waiting room with strangers made me uneasy. The newspapers and evening broadcasts had led modern parents to believe that the boogeyman was always lurking, ready to pounce. I wondered if my parents ever worried about Marge and me like that, but that thought lasted only a split second. Of course they didn't. My dad used to have me sit on the bench outside an old tavern he occasionally frequented while he had a beer with friends, and that bench was on a corner of a busy street, near a bus stop. You understand that this is an important meeting for Daddy, right?
I know, London said, and I want you to sit quietly. And don't get up and wander around and don't talk to strangers. You already told me.
Vivian and I must have been doing something right because London did exactly as she was told. The receptionist remarked on what a well-behaved young lady she'd been during the meeting, which soothed my anxiety about what I'd done. Unfortunately, the client wasn't interested in my services. I was 0 for 3 at that point. At the restaurant the following day, I upped that to 0 for 4. Forcing myself to remain optimistic, I had my best presentation to date on Friday afternoon. The owner of the spa, a blonde, quick-talking woman in her 50s, was enthusiastic, and though my sense was that they were already doing well, she knew who I was and was even familiar with some of my other campaigns. As I spoke with her, I felt relaxed and confident, and when I finished, I had the sense that I couldn't have done any better. But despite all that, the stars weren't aligning for me. Not only did I fail to set up any meetings for the following week, I'd gone 0 for 5. Still, it was date night. When there's nothing to celebrate, celebrate anyway, right? That wasn't quite true, though. While I hadn't had any work success, Vivian certainly seemed to be lighting things on fire at her new job. She'd even been able to line up a musical act, a band from the 80s with a name I recognized. How she'd pulled that off, I had not the slightest idea. I'd also spent more one-on-one time with London, and that was definitely a great development. Except that it didn't feel all that great. With the constant running around from one thing to the next, it almost felt as though I was working for London instead of enjoying time with London. Was I alone in feeling that way? Did other parents feel like that? I have no idea. But date night was date night, and while London was in dance class, I swung by the store and picked up salmon, steak, and a nice bottle of Chardonnay. Vivian's SUV was in the driveway when I got home, and London jumped out of the car calling for her mom. I followed with the plastic bag holding the goodies for dinner, only to see London zipping back down the steps. Vivian was nowhere in sight, but I heard her calling out from the bedroom.
London raced that way and I heard Vivian say,
"There you are, sweetheart. How was your day?"
I followed the sounds and spotted Vivian and London near the bed, upon which lay an open suitcase, already packed, along with two more empty department store bags. Errands. "Getting ready for tomorrow, I see. Actually, I have to leave tonight."
"You're leaving?"
London burst out before I could. I watched as Vivian put her hand on London's shoulder.
"I don't want to, but I have to. I'm sorry, sweetheart." "But I don't want you to go," London said. "I know, sweetie, but when I get home on Sunday, I'll make it up to you. We'll do something fun, just you and me."
"Like what?"
London asked.
"It's up to you." "Maybe..."
I watched as London's mind sorted through the problem.
"We can go to the blueberry farm? The one you took me to before? And pick blueberries and pet the animals?"
"That's a great idea," Vivian said. "Let's do it.
And we also need to clean the hamster cage."
"Your daddy will do that for you when I'm gone. But for now, let's get you something to eat, okay? I think we have some leftover chicken and rice I can heat up. Can you wait for Mommy in the kitchen while I talk to Daddy for a minute?"
"So," I said after London had left us alone, "you're off tonight."
"I have to head out in half an hour. Walter wants me and a couple of the other executives to do a walkthrough with the manager of the Ritz-Carlton to make sure it's getting set up the way Walter expects."
"The Ritz-Carlton?" I nodded. "Is that where you're staying?"
She nodded. "I know you're probably upset. Just so you know, I wasn't thrilled with knowing I'd be gone two nights either. I'm just trying to make the best of it."
"That's all you can do," I said, forcing a smile.
"Let me go spend a little time with London, okay? I think she's upset."
"Yeah," I said.
"Okay."
She stared at me.
"You're angry with me."
"No, it's not that. I just wish you didn't have to go. I mean, I get it, but I was looking forward to spending some time with you tonight."
"I know," she said. "Me too." She leaned in for a quick kiss. "We'll make up for it next Friday, okay?"
"Okay."
"Can you zip my bag for me? I don't want to wreck my nails. I just got them done."
She held up her hands for me.
"Is the color okay?"
"It's great," I assured her. I secured the suitcase and pulled it from the bed. "You said you have a walkthrough tonight at the hotel?"
"The whole thing has turned into a really big deal.
Atlanta's 4 hours away."
"I'm not driving, I'm flying."
"What time's your flight?"
6:30.
"Shouldn't you already be on your way to the airport? Or at the airport right now?"
"We're flying on Walter's private jet."
Walter. I was beginning to hate the sound of his name, almost as much as I hated the word errands. "Wow," I said, "you're moving up in the world."
"It's not my jet," she said, smiling. "It's his."
"I knew you could pull it off all by your lonesome," Marge said. "You should be proud."
"I'm not proud, I'm exhausted." We were at my parents' place by 11 on Saturday, and the day was already sweltering. Marge and Liz sat across from me on the back porch while I recounted the week I just spent in all its hectic detail. London was helping my mom make sandwiches. Dad was, as usual, in the garage.
"So? You told me yourself you finally felt like you were hitting your stride on that last presentation."
"A lot of good it did, and I've got nothing lined up for next week."
"On the bright side," Marge said, "that should make it a lot easier to get London to all her activities, and you'll have more time to cook and clean."
When I glared at her, Marge laughed.
"Oh, lighten up. With Vivian starting work, you knew it was going to be a crazy week anyway. And you know that whole 'it's always darkest before the dawn' thing? I have the feeling that dawn is right around the corner."
"I don't know," I said. "I was thinking as I drove over here this morning that I should have been a plumber like Dad. Plumbers always have work."
"True," Marge said. "But then again, there's a lot of crap involved with it."
Despite my mood, I laughed under my breath. "That's funny."
"What can I say? I bring joy and mirth to everyone around me, even whiny little brothers."
"I haven't been whining."
"Yes, you have. You've been whining since you sat down."
"Liz?" She absently picked at the armrest before answering.
"Maybe a little."
After lunch, and with the day only getting hotter, I decided to bring London to the movies. One of those animated ones. Marge and Liz came with us and seemed to enjoy it as much as London did. As for me, I wanted to enjoy it, but my thoughts kept drifting to the previous week, which made me wonder what on earth might be coming next. After the movie, I didn't want to go home. Marge and Liz seemed content to hang out at my parents' place as well, and Mom ended up making tuna casserole, something London regarded as a treat, what with all the white flour in the pasta. She had a larger-than-normal portion and began to doze in the car on our way back home. I figured I'd get her in the bath, read a few stories, and spend the rest of the night zoning out in front of the television. But it was not meant to be. As soon as she got in the house, she trotted up to see the hamsters, and I heard her voice calling to me from upstairs.
"Daddy, come quick! I think something is wrong with Mrs. Sprinkles!"
I went to her room and peered into the cage, staring at a hamster that seemed to be making an attempt to push through the glass. Her room smelled like a barn. "She seems fine to me," I said.
"That's Mr. Sprinkles. Mrs. Sprinkles isn't moving."
I squinted. "I think she's sleeping, honey."
"But what if she's sick?"
I had no idea what to do in that case, and opening the lid, I scooped Mrs. Sprinkles into my hand. She was warm, always a good sign, and I could feel her begin to move.
"Is she okay?"
"She seems fine to me," I said. "Do you want to hold her?" She nodded and cupped her hands. I put the hamster in them. I watched as she brought the little critter closer to her face.
"I think I'll just hold her for a little while to make sure."
"All right," I said, kissing the top of her head. "But not too long, all right? It's already almost bedtime." I kissed her on top of the head and headed toward the door.
"Daddy?"
she asked.
"Yes?" "You need to clean their cage."
"I'll do it tomorrow, okay? I'm kind of tired."
"Mommy said you'd clean it."
"I will. I just said I'd clean it tomorrow."
"But what if it's making Mrs. Sprinkles sick? I want you to clean it now."
Not only was she not listening, her pitch was beginning to rise, and I wasn't in the mood to deal with it. "I'll be back in a little while to get you ready for bed. Put your dirty clothes in the hamper, okay?" For the next half hour, I flipped through the channels, finding nothing whatsoever to watch. More than 100 channels and Zippo, but then again, I was cranky on top of being tired. Tomorrow I'd be scooping poop from a hamster cage. My client list was hovering at zero, and unless there was some sort of miracle, it would remain that way another week. Meanwhile, my wife was flying on private jets and staying at the Ritz-Carlton. In time, I rose from my spot on the couch and went back to London's room. By then, her hamsters were back in the cage and she was playing with her Barbies. "Hey, sweetheart," I said. "Are you about ready for your bath?" She answered without turning toward me.
"I don't want to take a bath tonight."
"But you got all sweaty with Nana today."
"No."
I blinked. "What's wrong, sweetheart?"
"I'm mad at you."
"Why are you mad at me?"
"Because you don't care about Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkles."
"Of course I care about them." In the cage, both of them were moving about, no different than any other night. "And you know you need a bath."
"I want Mommy to do it."
"I know you do, but Mommy's not here."
"Then I'm not going to take a bath."
"Will you look at me?"
"No."
She sounded almost like Vivian as she said it, and I was at a loss. London continued to send Barbie rampaging around the Barbie dream house. The doll seemed on the verge of kicking over the furniture. "How about I get the water going, okay? Then we can talk about it. I'll put extra bubbles in there." As promised, I added extra bubbles to the water, and when it was ready, I turned off the faucet. London hadn't moved. Barbie was still raging through the playhouse with Ken by her side.
"I can't make breakfast," I heard her make Barbie say to Ken, "because I have to go to work."
"But daddies are supposed to work," Ken said.
"Maybe you should have thought about that before you quit."
I felt my stomach tighten, certain that London was mimicking Vivian and me. "Your bath is ready," I said.
"I told you I'm not taking a bath."
"Just come on."
"No!"
she screamed.
"I'm not taking a bath and you can't make me. You made Mommy get a job."
"I didn't make Mommy get a job."
"Yes, you did!"
she shouted, and when she turned, I saw tears streaming down her cheeks.
"She told me that she had to get a job because you're not working."
Another father probably would have been less defensive, but I was exhausted and her words stung, if only because I felt bad enough about myself already.
"I am working," I said, my voice rising, "and taking care of you and cleaning the house." "I want Mommy," she cried,
and for the first time I realized that Vivian hadn't called today. Nor could I call her. The event was probably in full swing right about now. I took a deep breath. "She'll be here tomorrow, and the two of you are going to the blueberry farm, remember? You want to be all clean for her, don't you?"
"No!" she shouted. "I hate you!"
The next thing I knew, I was marching across the room and seized London by the arm. She began to struggle and scream, and I dragged her to the bathroom like a bad parent video on YouTube. Either you get yourself undressed and into the bath, or I'll undress you. I'm not kidding.
Go away!
She screamed, and after putting her pajamas on the countertop, I closed the door. For the next few minutes, I heard her alternately crying and talking to herself while I waited outside the door. Get in the bath, London, I warned through the door. If you don't, I'll make you clean the hamster cage all by yourself. I heard her scream again. A minute later, though, I heard her climbing into the tub. I continued to wait. After a little while, I heard her playing with her tub toys without the anger I'd heard earlier. Finally, the door opened. London was in her pajamas, her hair wet.
Can we dry my hair tonight instead of leaving it wet?
I gritted my teeth. Of course we can, sweetheart.
I miss Mommy.
I squatted down and took her in my arms, breathing in the sweet, clean scent of her soap and shampoo. I know you do, I said, and held her close, wondering how a father as messed up as I could have managed to help make something so wonderful, even as my little girl began to cry. I read her the story of Noah and the Ark as we lay in the bed together. Her favorite part, the part I had to read a second time, was when the Ark was finished and the animals started to arrive. Two by two, I read aloud, they came in pairs from all over the world. Lions and horses and dogs and elephants, zebras and giraffes.
And hamsters, London added.
And hamsters, I agreed. And two by two, they boarded the Ark. How will they all fit, the people wondered. But God had a plan for that, too. They made their way onto the ark, and there was plenty of room, and all the animals were happy. And two by two, they stayed in the ark while the rain began to fall. As I was finishing the story, London was fading. I turned out the light and kissed her cheek. I love you, London, I whispered.
Love you too, Daddy,
she mumbled. And I crept quietly from the room. Two by two, I thought to myself as I made my way down the stairs. London and me, father and daughter, both of us doing the best we could. Even then, I felt like I was failing her, failing at everything. Chapter 8. New Experiences. Last February, when things were going from bad to worse for me at the agency, London got the flu. And it wasn't pretty. She threw up pretty much nonstop for 2 days, and we had to bring her to the hospital to stop the vomiting and administer fluids. I was scared. Vivian was too, though on the surface she exuded a lot more confidence with the doctors than I did. When she spoke to them, she was calm and cool while asking appropriate questions. London didn't have to stay overnight, and when we brought her home, Vivian sat with her until midnight. Because she'd been awake pretty much the entire night the evening before, I took over. Like Vivian, I sat in the rocking chair and held my daughter. She was still feverish, and I can remember how small and frail she felt, wrapped in a thin blanket and sweating and shivering at the same time. She woke every 20 minutes. Sometime around 6, I finally put her in bed and went downstairs for coffee. An hour later, when I was pouring yet another cup, London padded into the kitchen and took a seat at the table beside Vivian. London moved lethargically, and her face was pale. Hi, sweetheart. How are you feeling?
I'm hungry,
London responded. That's a good sign, Vivian said. She put her hand on London's forehead, held it, then smiled.
I think your fever's gone. I feel a little better.
Russ, would you put some Cheerios in a bowl without milk?
Sure, I said.
Let's try cereal without the milk, okay? I don't want your tummy to get upset.
I brought the Cheerios to the table along with my coffee and took a seat beside them. You were really sick, I said. Your mom and I have been really worried about you.
And we're going to take it easy today, okay?
London nodded as she munched. I was glad to see her eating.
Thanks for holding me when I was sick, Mommy.
Of course, sweet girl. I always hold you when you're sick.
I know,
London said. I took a sip of coffee, waiting for Vivian to say that I'd helped out as well. But she didn't. Kids are resilient. I know this because my mom and dad have used that expression for as long as I can remember, especially when describing their own parenting philosophy to Marge and me. Why?
Why did you do such things to us? We would ask.
Ah, no worries. Kids are resilient.
In all fairness, there was some truth to their words. When London came downstairs on Sunday morning, she seemed to have forgotten completely about her tantrum from the night before. She was in a chatty mood and was even happier when I let her have Lucky Charms while I went upstairs to clean her hamster cage. I filled half a plastic bag with soiled shavings. It was disgusting, and tossed it into the garbage can. In the far corner, I saw London's bicycle, and though it was already getting hot outside, I knew what she and I could do this morning. Hey, I said to London when I got back inside, do you want to do something fun this morning?
What?
She asked. Why don't we go bike riding again? Maybe without the training wheels.
I'll fall,
she said. I promise that you won't fall. I'll be right beside you and I'll hold on to the seat.
I haven't ridden a bike in a long time.
And never without training wheels, I thought. That's okay. If you don't like it or you get scared, we can stop.
I'm not scared, she said. But Mommy won't like it if I'm all sweaty.
If you get sweaty, you'll just wash up. No big deal. Do you want to give it a try? She thought about it.
Maybe for a little while,
she hedged.
When's Mommy coming home?
As if my wife heard our daughter from miles away, my cell phone rang. Vivian's name popped up on the screen. Well, let's find out. It's your mom, I said, reaching for it. She must have been thinking about you. I connected the call and hit the speaker. Hey, babe, how are you? How did it go? I've got you on speaker and London is here.
Hey, baby girl, Vivian said. How are you? I'm so sorry I didn't call you yesterday. I've been running around like crazy since I've been here. How are you? How was yesterday? It was so much fun. I went to Nana's, and then Daddy and me and Auntie Marge and Auntie Liz went to see a movie, and it was really funny.
While Vivian chatted with London, I refilled my coffee and motioned that I was going back to the bedroom to change. I tossed on some shorts and a t-shirt and the pair of shoes I used to wear to the gym. Back in the kitchen, London was telling her mom about the hamsters, and Vivian finally asked for me. I picked up the phone, taking it off speaker. Hey there, I said.
She's in a good mood. Sounds like you two have been having a lot of fun. I'm jealous.
I hesitated, thinking about last night. It's been okay. How did last night go on your end?
Amazingly, it went off without a hitch.
Walter was thrilled. The video presentations were great, and so was the music. People went crazy for it. I'm glad it worked out.
It did. We raised a lot of money.
Turns out Walter isn't the only one who's frustrated with the current administration and Congress when it comes to development. The regulations are getting ridiculous. Developers are really getting squeezed, and it's almost impossible to turn a profit anymore. As evidenced by Walter's private jet, I thought. What time will you be home?
I'm hoping around 1, but we may be having lunch with a developer from Mississippi. If that happens, it'll probably be closer to 3.
Hold on for a second, I said. I moved from the kitchen to the living room. What about the blueberry farm?
I don't know if we'll be able to make it.
But you promised London you'd go.
I didn't promise.
I was right there, Viv. I heard you, and I backed you up last night.
What does that mean?
I recounted what had happened the night before.
Well, that's just great, she said. You shouldn't have reminded her.
You're saying this is my fault?
She's going to be even more upset.
Because you said you'd take her.
Just stop, Russ, okay? I was on the go for almost 20 hours straight, and I've had almost no sleep. Just talk to her, okay? Explain it to her.
What do you want me to tell her?
Please don't use that tone with me. I'm not the one who set up the lunch. I'm at Walter's mercy here, and there's a lot of money at stake.
Spannerman already has a lot of money. He's a billionaire. I heard her let out a long exhale.
Like I told you, she said, her voice taut. I still might make it. If the lunch doesn't work out, I'll be home by 1. I should know more in an hour or 2.
All right, I said, thinking about London. Let me know. I decided not to tell London anything until I knew more, and she followed me outside, watching as I got things ready. Because the bike was covered in dust, I brought out the hose and rinsed it, then toweled it dry. I pumped the tires and made sure there were no major leaks. After that, I had to hunt for a wrench. Why do tools always seem to vanish? And remove the training wheels. Because London had grown, I raised the seat and handlebars, and when it was finally ready, London followed me out to the street and hopped on. Do you remember what to do? I said, adjusting her helmet.
I'm supposed to pedal, she said. But you're not going to let go, right?
I won't let go until you're ready.
What if I'm not ready?
Then I won't let go. London began to pedal and wobble to the left and right as I held the seat, jogging while bent at the waist. Soon I was breathing hard and sweat began to drip, then pour. We went back and forth countless times, and just when it felt like I was going to have to tell her that I needed a break, her balance began to improve, at least in the straightaways. Little by little, I was able to lessen my grip on the seat. After that, I was able to use only my fingers, just enough to be able to grab her if she tilted. And then, I was able to let go. Not long at first, only a few seconds, and the next time was about the same. Then, when I thought she was ready, I said the magic words. I'm going to let go for a second, I gasped.
No, Daddy!
You can do it. Just try. I'll be right here to catch you. I let go of the seat and sped up, jogging beside the bike for no more than a second or two. London saw me, her face a picture of wonder, and then I resumed my original position and took hold of her seat again.
I was riding, Daddy, she shouted, without your help.
I held the seat as we turned around at the end of the cul-de-sac, and when she was balanced, I let go again, that time for 5 or 6 seconds, then a span of 10 seconds. Then she cruised the entire straightaway.
I'm riding, Daddy! I'm riding a bike!
She squealed. And though I was sweating hard and out of breath and felt like I was dying, I was somehow able to shout back,
I know, sweetheart. You're riding a bike.
By the time London was ready to quit, my entire body hurt and my shirt was soaked through. I rolled the bike into the garage and followed London inside. The blast of air conditioning was the very proof of God's existence. Daddy needs a break, I said, still trying to catch my breath.
Okay, Daddy,
she said. I went to the bathroom and hopped in a shower with the water somewhere between cool and cold. I stayed beneath the spray until I finally felt halfway human again, then dressed again and went to the kitchen. There was a text from Vivian.
Lunch was canceled. I'm heading to the airport now. Tell London I'll be home soon.
I found London in the living room, playing with her Barbies. Your mom's on her way home, I said. She should be here in a little while.
Okay,
London said, sounding strangely unmoved. I put together a salad and grilled the salmon for Vivian while I made sandwiches for London and me. By the time Vivian walked in the door, the table was set and the food was on the table. After a round of hugs and kisses for London, she came to the kitchen and kissed me as well.
Wow, she remarked, that's a pretty fancy meal for lunch.
I had the food here, so I figured why not. How's the flight?
Amazing. It's so nice not having to deal with parking or security or shoving suitcases into the overhead bins. Private jets are definitely the way to travel.
I'll keep that in mind when I begin making millions.
What did you and London do this morning?
I got the bike out of the garage.
Yeah?
She asked. How was she?
She was getting pretty good by the end.
Better you than me, she said. It's hot out there today. It wasn't so bad this morning, I lied.
Did you remember to put sunscreen on her?
No, I said. I forgot.
You have to try to remember these things. You know how much the sun can damage her skin?
I'll remember that next time. She kissed me again, and as we had lunch, she told me about her weekend and talked to London about her activities the previous week. Afterward, Vivian and London went to the car while I tidied up the kitchen. For the first time since Tuesday, London wasn't with me. I would have worked, but there wasn't anything to do. And while I thought I would enjoy my quiet afternoon, I found myself puttering around the house and thinking about London, surprised by how much I missed her. Vivian and London got back home around 5, carrying department store bags. There wasn't a smudge of dirt on my daughter's hands or face. Did you go to the farm? I asked.
No,
Vivian answered, setting the bags on the table.
It was way too hot out there this afternoon. We ended up going to the mall. London needed some school clothes.
Of course she did. Before we could speak more about it, Vivian breezed past me to the kitchen. I followed and tried to engage in conversation, but it was clear that Vivian was edgy and in no mood to mumble more than one-word answers. In the end, she made pasta and sautéed vegetables for London and me, along with a salad for herself, and dinner was eaten quickly. It wasn't until we were loading the dishes into the dishwasher that I finally asked her what was wrong.
You didn't tell me that you took the training wheels off her bike today, and that by riding her bike you meant actually riding her bike.
Sorry about that, I said. I thought you understood.
How was I supposed to know what you meant? You weren't very clear.
Are you upset?
Yes, I'm upset. Why wouldn't I be upset?
I'm not sure why you would be.
Because I wasn't there. Did it ever cross your mind that I might have liked to have seen London riding her bike for the first time?
She's still just a beginner. She can't do the turns yet without tipping over.
So? The issue is that you went ahead and taught her to ride a bike without me. Why didn't you wait until I got home?
I didn't think about it. She grabbed a dish towel and began drying her hands.
That's exactly your problem, Russ. You do this every time. Our whole life has always been about what you wanted.
That's not true, I protested. And how was I supposed to know you'd even want a watch? You didn't even want the bike in the first place.
Of course I wanted London to have a bike. Why would you think that? I'm the one who bought it for her for Christmas.
I stared at her, thinking, I had to drag you to the store. Did she really not remember it that way? Or was I going crazy? As I pondered the question, she turned to leave. Where are you going? I asked.
London needs a bath, she said. You don't mind if I spend a little time with my daughter, do you?
She left the kitchen, her words ricocheting in my mind. My daughter? After London went to bed, Vivian and I sat on the couch, the television tuned to the Food Network. Vivian was sipping a glass of wine. I thought again about bringing up the daycare issue, but I wasn't sure whether or not she was still angry about the bike riding incident. Her eyes flicked toward me with a quick smile, then back to her magazine. Better than being ignored, I suppose. Hey, Viv? I asked. I'm sorry you missed watching London's first bike ride. I really didn't think it was that big of a deal. She seemed to consider my words, and I watched her shoulders drop slightly.
It's all right. I just wish I had been there to see it. I hate that I wasn't.
I understand that. I've missed a lot of firsts over the years, too.
But you're not her mom. It's different for mothers.
I guess so, I said. Not completely sure about that, but there was no need to point that out.
Maybe tomorrow night you can show me, she said, her voice soft.
And I saw the Vivian that I'd fallen for so many years ago. It was uncanny how my wife never seemed to age. I'm glad your event went off without a hitch. I'll bet you already have your boss eating out of the palm of your hand. Walter doesn't eat out of anyone's hand. How's next week shaping up?
I'll find out more tomorrow. I might have another overnight on Wednesday.
Another fundraiser?
No, this time it's a trip to D.C., and I know London's going to be upset again. It makes me feel like an awful mother.
You're not awful, and London knows you love her.
But it's her last summer before kindergarten, and she probably feels like I've abandoned her. She needs stability, and right now she's not getting it.
I'm doing my best.
I know you are. She told me that she likes spending time with you, but that it's weird.
She said it's weird for her?
You know what she means. She's just used to me, that's all. It's been a big change for her. You know that.
I still don't like the word weird.
She's a child. She doesn't have a huge vocabulary. No big deal. You ready to hit the bedroom? We can put on the TV and relax.
Are you making a pass at me?
Maybe.
Is that a yes or a no?
How about I finish my glass of wine first?
I smiled. And later, when our bodies were intertwined, I found myself thinking that as hard as the previous week had been, it ended in an absolutely perfect way.
Chapter 9. The past is never quite past. A few years ago, when feeling nostalgic, I reflected on a few of the most meaningful days of my life. I recalled my high school and college graduations, the day I proposed, and my wedding day, and of course, the day that London was born. And yet none of those moments had been surprises because I'd known they were coming. I also recalled the memorable firsts of my own life, just as I recalled those firsts with London. My first kiss, the first time I slept with a woman, my first beer, and the first time my dad let me slide behind the wheel of a car. I remembered my first real paycheck and the near reverential feeling I had as I walked through the first home I'd purchased. And yet there were other priceless memories, memories that were neither first nor expected, but perfect in their spontaneous joy. Once, when I was a kid, my dad shook me awake in the middle of the night and brought me outside to watch a meteor shower. He laid a towel on the grass, and as we stared up at the sky, watching trails of white racing across the sky, I sensed in the excited way he would point them out the love he felt for me, but so often had trouble expressing. I remembered the time that Marge and I stayed up all night laughing and giggling as we devoured an entire bag of chocolate chip cookies. The first night I really understood that she and I would always have each other. I thought back to the evening when my mom, after two glasses of wine, spoke about her own childhood in a way that allowed me to see her as the child she once was, someone I could have imagined as a friend. Those moments have stayed with me forever, partly because of their simplicity, but also because they were revelatory. Nor were they ever quite repeated, and I can't shake the thought that if I ever tried to replicate them, the original memories would slip through my fingers like sand, lessening the hold I have on them now. On Monday morning, Vivian was out the door at 7:30, carrying with her a duffel bag.
"I want to squeeze in a workout if I can," she said. "I feel like I'm getting softer by the minute."
London and I followed a few minutes later, dressed in shorts and t-shirts. We were heading to the club for my daughter's first tennis lesson, and when I saw men dressed in ties on the road beside me, I felt like I'd been kicked out of the only club where I'd ever wanted to be a member. Without work, I felt like I'd lost a major part of my identity, and if I didn't turn it around, I was going to lose myself entirely. Time for more cold calls. As soon as I parked the car, London spotted some girls from the neighborhood and skipped toward them onto the court. I made my way to the bleachers with a pad of paper and typed the words "plastic surgeons" into the search engine of my phone. Like attorneys, they were an area that Peters avoided. He considered them prima donnas and cheapskates. But my thinking was that doctors had money and the intelligence to understand how advertising could benefit their practice. There were a number of them in the Charlotte area divided among various offices, a good sign, and I began experimenting with a few opening lines, hoping to find just the right combination of words to keep the office manager, or the doctor, if I got that lucky, on the phone long enough to get interested enough to set an appointment. "Can you believe how damn hot it is already?" I heard beside me, in a sharp New Jersey accent. "I swear to God I'm gonna melt." When I turned, I saw a man maybe a few years older than me, built like a block, with dark hair and bronzed skin. Above his suit, he wore aviator sunglasses with mirrored lenses. "Are you talking to me?" "Of course I'm talking to you. Aside from you and me, it's like an estrogen convention out here. We're the only two guys within 100 yards of this place. I'm Joey the Bulldog Taglieri, by the way." He scooted closer and held out his hand. "Russell Green," I said, shaking it. "Bulldog? University of Georgia mascot, my alma mater. And I've got a big neck. The nickname stuck. Nice to meet you, Russ. And if I have a heart attack or stroke out here, do me a favor and call 911. Adrian should have warned me that there wouldn't be a lick of shade out here." "Adrian?" "My ex. Number 3, by the way. She dropped this responsibility in my lap yesterday because she knew it was important to me, and God knows she's not in the favor-granting business these days. She knows I'm supposed to be in court at 9:30, but does she care? Ask me if she cares. She doesn't care. It's not like she had to see her mother. Who cares if her mother's in the hospital? She's in the hospital every other week because she's a hypochondriac. It's not like the doctors ever find anything wrong with her. That woman's probably going to live to be 100. He gestured at my pad of paper. "You preparing your opening remarks?" "Opening remarks?" "What you say to the jury? You're a lawyer, aren't you? I think I've seen you at the courthouse." "No," I said. "Wrong guy. I'm not a lawyer. I'm in advertising." "Yeah? What firm?" "The Phoenix Agency," I said. "It's my own firm." "No kidding. The guys I use are a bunch of idiots, if you ask me." My ears perked up. "What firm are you using?" He mentioned the name and I recognized it as a national firm that specialized in attorney commercials, which meant that for the most part, commercials were pretty much cookie cutter, with the same images and only slight variations to the script. Before I could dwell on it, he changed the subject. "How long have you been a member of the country club?" 4 years or so. "Do you like it? I just joined." "Considering I don't golf, I do. The food's good, and the pool is a summer hangout. You can meet a lot of interesting people here." "I'm with you on the golf thing. Tried it for a year, threw out my back, and ended up giving the clubs to my brother. I joined for the tennis. I know I don't look like it, but I'm not half bad.
college scholarship, dreams of going pro, but my serve only had so much speed 'cause of my height. That's the way it goes, I guess. So now I figured I'd get my daughter started young so that when she's a teenager, we'd have something to do together when she starts to hate me. She's the one out there with the turquoise top, by the way. Dark hair, long legs. Which one is yours? I pointed out London, who was standing on the back line with several other girls. Over there, I said. Second from the left. She's going to be a tall one, too. That's good. We'll see whether she even likes it. It's her first day picking up a racket. You said you're an attorney? Yeah, personal injury, the occasional class action suit. I know what you're probably thinking about lawyers like me, and I really don't care. No one likes personal injury attorneys until they really need one, and then all of a sudden, I'm their best friend and their savior. And not just because I almost always get my clients the money they deserve, but because I listen. Half of this business is about listening. I learned that when I was in family law, before wife number one ran off with a neighbor, and I figured out that I needed to earn a lot more money. Family law wasn't cutting it. Word of advice? Always get a prenup. Good to know. He motioned toward my pad. Plastic surgeons, huh? I was thinking of expanding into that area. Yeah, I've made a fortune off a few of them. They may as well have been using hacksaws on a few of my clients. You want my advice with those guys, as someone who's dealt with them in the past? Go ahead. They have god complexes, but are terrible at business. So play to their egos and then promise them you can make them rich. Trust me, that'll get their attention. I'll keep that in mind. He waved at the court. I'm not sold on the tennis pro out there just yet. What do you think? I don't know enough to even venture a guess. You can tell he's played, but I don't get the sense he's coached little kids before. They're a whole different ball of wax. Attention spans like gnats. The key is to keep things moving along or the kids will get restless. Makes sense. Maybe you should coach. He laughed. Now that would be something, huh? Nah, not for me. Never coach your own kid. That's one of my rules. She'd probably end up hating me even more than she already will. So what's your interest in this? Do you play? No, I said. This was my wife's idea. And yet here you are. Here I am, I agreed. And Joey turned his attention back to what was happening on the court. I continued to jot opening lines, but knew I'd have to do a lot more research before I was ready for a presentation. Every now and then, Joey would make a comment about foot positions with a proper arc to take when hitting the ball, and we'd drift back into small talk for a couple more minutes. When the session ended, Joey shook my hand a second time. Are you going to be out here tomorrow? When I nodded, he went on. Me too. See you then. I left the bleachers and met London as she was exiting the court. Her face was red from the heat. Did you have a good time? I asked her.
Mom really thinks I should play. She told me this morning.
I know she does. I was asking what you thought about it.
It was hot. Who was that you were talking to?
Joey.
Is he a friend?
We just met. Why?
Because you were acting like you were friends.
He's a nice guy, I said, and as we walked toward the car, I reflected on what he'd said about his advertising firm being a bunch of idiots. And, of course, that I'd see him again tomorrow. I got London a snack, knowing she needed to cool off before art class. At the same time, my thoughts drifted to the advertising I'd done for attorneys, prior to Peters pulling the plug. I remember filming commercials in wood-shelved offices filled with law books, and recommending targeted spends on cable channels between the hours of 9 and noon, when injured people might be watching. These days, with most of the commercials nationwide put together by a single national firm, there was an opportunity for a niche in the market, if I wanted to go that route. I suspected I could get better deals at the cable company since I had long working relationships with the key players, something the national firm didn't have. In the long run, it might not be good for my firm. I might have to go the Peters route and eventually give them up, but that day was a long way off, and I didn't want to think about it. Instead, I kept my focus on the fact that Taglieri might, just might, be open to a possible switch. It took London less time than I thought to be back to normal, and she talked about Bodhi for most of the drive. As soon as she walked through the door of the studio, she turned, and I lowered myself. She wrapped her arms around my neck and squeezed.
I love you, Daddy.
Love you too, I said. When I stood, I watched as she rushed toward a young blonde boy, and when they were close, they hugged each other too. Cute. Then all at once I frowned. On second thought, I wasn't sure what to think about my little girl already hugging boys.
I had no idea what was normal in such situations. After a quick wave to the art teacher, I left for the coffee shop with my computer, figuring I'd start looking into the latest trends in legal advertising as well as any regulations that may have changed since my last advertising campaign. I ordered a coffee, found a seat, and opened my computer. I pulled up some preliminary information and was reviewing it when I heard a voice coming from off to the side.
Russ?
It was impossible not to recognize her. Her chestnut hair brushed her shoulders and was styled in a way that accented her naturally high cheekbones, while her hazel eyes were as striking as they'd always been.
Emily?
I asked. She started toward the table holding a cup of coffee.
I thought that was you in the studio, she said. How are you? Long time no see.
I'm doing well, I said, rising from the table. Surprising me, she leaned in for a quick hug, which triggered a flood of happy memories. What are you doing here? Why were you in the studio?
My son's in the class, she said. Takes after his mom, I guess.
Her smile held genuine warmth.
You look great.
Thanks. You too. How are you doing? Up close, I noticed that her eyes were flecked with gold, and I wondered whether I'd ever noticed before.
I'm doing okay.
Just okay?
Yeah, you know, life.
I understood exactly what she meant, and though she tried to hide it, I thought I heard in her tone a flicker of sadness. The next word came out almost automatically, even as I realized that spending time with a person you once loved and slept with can get complicated if one isn't careful. Would you like to join me?
You sure? You look busy.
I'm just doing some research. No big deal.
Then I'd love to, she said. But I can only stay a few minutes. I've got some things I want to ship to my mom, and depending on the line, it can take forever.
When we were seated, I looked at her, amazed that it had been almost 11 years since our breakup. Like Vivian, she hadn't seemed to have aged at all, but I pushed the thought away, steering myself back to safer ground. How old is your son?
5, she answered. He'll be starting kindergarten in the fall.
My daughter too, I said. Where will he be going? When she mentioned the name of the school, I raised an eyebrow. What a coincidence. That's where London's going too.
It's supposed to be great.
And expensive, I thought. That's what I hear too, I said. How are your mom and dad doing? I asked. I haven't talked to them in years.
They're doing well. My dad is finally retiring next year.
From AT&T?
Yep. He was a lifer. He told me he wants to get an RV and travel the country. Of course, Mom wants nothing to do with that, so she's going to continue to work at the church until my dad's whimsy passes.
St. Michael's?
Of course. Both my parents worked at the same place their entire lives. That just doesn't happen anymore. How about you? Are you still working for the Peters Group?
I raised an eyebrow. I'm impressed you remembered. But no, I left there a few months ago and went out on my own.
How's it going?
It's going, I hedged.
That's exciting. I remember you telling me you wanted to be an entrepreneur.
I was young and naive back then. Now I'm old, but still naive. She laughed.
How's Vivian?
She's doing well. She just started working again. I didn't realize you knew her.
I don't. I saw her at the studio a few times earlier this summer, but she never stayed for the class. She was always dressed in workout clothes.
Sounds like her. How's your husband?
You mean David?
She tilted her head. Sure, I said. David.
We're divorced, as of last January.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm sorry, too.
How long were you married?
7 years.
May I ask what happened?
I don't know, she said. It's hard to explain. To say we drifted apart sounds cliched. Lately, when people ask, I just tell them that the marriage worked until it didn't. But that isn't the answer most people want to hear. It's like they want to be able to gossip about it later, or boil it down to a single incident.
As she spoke, she rubbed her thumb against her index finger.
How long have you and Vivian been together?
We're coming up on 9 years now.
There you go, she said. Good for you.
Thanks.
So Vivian started working again?
I nodded. She's working for a big developer here in town. Public relations. How about you? Are you working?
I guess you can call it that. I still paint.
Really?
My ex was good about that. Encouraging me, I mean. And it's been going well. I mean, I'll never be a Rothko or Pollock, but I'm represented by one of the galleries downtown, and I sell 10 or 12 pieces a year.
That's fantastic, I said, meaning it.
You always had such a talent. I remember watching you paint and wondering how you knew what to do with the colors and the... I trailed off, trying to recall the right word.
Composition?
Yes. Are you still doing modern? She nodded.
Sort of. I work in abstract realism.
You know I have